All right, good morning. I will call us to order for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, March 17th, and ask if the three of you would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on this morning's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of minutes from March 10th.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed.
Move approval.
Second.
Further discussion? Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda. Please add utility permits 1552, 1553, 1554, and 1555.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda with the changes passes. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 1562 regarding Board of Supervisors' position on annexation of land located in Sections 28 and 29 of Franklin Township into the City of Ames. Charlie, how are you this morning?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Super, super.
I believe the documentation I included had a map, I guess, of the proposed area, but if you recall the Athan property that was annexed in about a year or so ago now, this is really that kind of pie piece that was missing out of that annexation just to the south of that piece of property. It is considered a voluntary annexation, however, an 80-20 annexation at that. There was also a chart that I believe included with your documentation that showed the percentage of that. I do want to point out that the City of Ames is basing their 80-20 calculation off net acreage and not gross acreage, net acreage taking out the right-of-way acreage. I don't believe the City of Ames really ever does annexations this way. I believe they usually do use the gross acreage calculation, but I at least wanted to bring that to the board's attention.
That's well, how would that change it?
Gross acreage, when they did it, the consenting property owners were 79.22%. And when they did it by net, it was 83.06.
So, but at the end of the day, it's going to be their decision.
The City of Ames, yeah.
Yeah.
It has to go to the city to buy
right, it has to go to them and their, you know, board and so forth.
Yep.
And so, as I read the resolution and looking at us, well, we'll get to that part a little later, with the consistency of how we've basically looked at that, it makes sense to look at you know, what is being proposed in the resolution. But I think it is interesting to note that, you know, over time, depending upon the property, depending upon circumstances, there could be that variance that's yes. It's somewhat allowed. But I think it's important for us to have that additional knowledge that this is kind of going a little bit against what they normally have done in previous annexations.
And we looked through state code, and I had Scott Wall at the auditor's office kind of look at it as well, too, since he deals with a lot of these from the right-of-way perspective. State code's pretty silent on whether you use net or gross. It doesn't really give you one way or the other. I know during the consultation meeting that we had with the City of Ames, I asked them if they had talked to the City Development Board, and the City Development Board did tell them, yeah, you can really do it whatever way you want. So there wasn't too much strong guidance coming from the Development Board. But again, I just wanted to make the board aware that according to Ames, during that consultation meeting, they've always done it based off gross, and this will be the first time they're doing it off net. And again, based off the numbers, they are doing it on net, so they can meet that 80-20. And again, the resolution that you have in front of you is a resolution of no position.
Right.
I did that based off the fact that the board typically takes no position on these. So if anything needs to change on there, I believe we do have 1 week left till we have to get this to them. So if there is any changes to that position, we could probably bring a new resolution back next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I would, I, unless there's other questions, I would support the move that we approve the resolution 1562 regarding the Board of Supervisors' position on annexation of land in Section 28 and 29 of Franklin Township, which in essence indicates that the Board of Supervisors taking no position on the proposed annexation.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Charlie, anything to add? Thank you for your clear and concise explanation and very interesting process that we're using here. Hearing nothing else. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1562 passes.
Thanks, Charlie.
Next item is consideration of quotes between ABI Systems and IT for equipment purchase. Barb. Hi, Barb.
Hey. Yep.
Good morning. Barb Steinbeck, Story County IT. I'm good. Well, not really so good.
Oh.
I need to apologize in advance. I may have to abruptly leave the room because I have a fit of coughing or lose my voice, but please bear with me. This quote, and if you'll recall, we did have a previously signed quote with a different arrangement for this room. It included speakers that would hang from the ceiling and then some type of a mixer addition to Shelley's equipment. After the network administrator left, AVI approached me and they said they weren't confident with that layout simply because Dave had promised he would be the one managing the mixer portion of it, and it was a used device that they, after he left, they weren't confident they could support it. So at your request, I got together with Shelley and Paul, and we came up with a solution that I think makes sense and includes wireless mics and then a touch screen panel where Shelley sits. And as you note on the quote, they will take – we decided we didn't need all of the microphones at the front desk, that there were very, very few occasions when they were all needed, so we were going to replace those with four microphones wireless. And it should allow you to be able to lean back in your seat and still talk and be heard. And then there will be two microphones, possibly three, that will accommodate the different layouts of the room. And if you notice near the bottom of that first box under the scope of work, it said that Story County needs to give the room sets to AVI so they configure them. What this includes is there will be a touch panel screen where Shelley sits, and there will just be icons, like on a computer desktop, and you'll select the icon for how the room is set up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the current configuration will be one of those. When we have the budget meetings, that will be another one. And then when we have the manager meetings with the tables all in the middle, that will be the third. I can't think of any others that we usually have, but if we have a different one, they'll set it up for us, and then when the meeting starts, Shelley will select the configuration to match what the room layout is, and the microphone should be able to pick up accordingly.
So to help me understand, so one of the things would be this is going to be managed off-site.
It's managed here.
Okay.
We will manage it.
All
they'll
right,
set it up for us.
Okay, so based on the screen, if it's set up in that way, then she can punch, that icon or whatever you call it.
Sure.
And then that automatically allows the mics to be engaged based upon, where most of the activity is basically being done.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And the other question that you raised, you said it's two or possibly three. If we approve this and let's say we start out, if two is out there is designed, and it's determined at a later date that we need that additional third one, will that be factored into the agreement in such a way that it's not going to be a big major cost differential if at some point later we think we needed that third mic?
We have the capability of using up to six at one time.
Okay.
That's all that our BIAP module will be able to hold.
Okay.
And I think, instead of replacing the system at this time, let's see if we can get by with six.
Right.
I don't see a lot of occasions where we'd need more than that, but this will hold up to six.
Okay. So let me say that, let's say you said four's up here. Let's say you had one. Are any of those mobile to which it could be moved into a close area. And I'm kind of thinking a little bit about, you know, we've got, let's say that that area over there is still being, is still going to be used as a way to communicate in the system, I would assume. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so one of those other two, if we had, like, during our budget work session, we've got the auditor and the staff and so forth there, that still would be able to be picked up by that location. And my question would be, is of the four that's up here, would any of those be able to be accessed anywhere else in the room?
I don't believe you can do it on the fly.
Right.
That's why we need to make sure that we give them all the possible configurations.
Okay. So are there any thought at all of a portable mic being used anywhere?
Yes. You mean like a lapel mic or a handheld mic?
Right, exactly.
Yes, one of the six can be used for that.
Okay. Yeah, that seemed to me would cover most scenarios that I could think of.
Now, if you'll notice, the cost is a little higher than what we had anticipated before. I think we previously agreed to $5,000. So this solution will cost $10,000. However, I do believe that I can pull some money from a different line item in my budget to accommodate this. As you know, the CLP has some computers that will be coming back, and there are 17 of them that I can use to put into our inventory changeover. So that'll free up some money that I could put toward this project.
And you say Paul and Michelle and so forth was there, and, you know, from your initial conversation and so forth, you think this will meet our need?
The microphones are rechargeable, so they'll go in, when they're not being used, they'll go into a little charging dock.
Okay.
So, yeah, so every one of the portable microphones that we have to give up one of these because we can't just add them to the system.
Okay.
So our thought was if we could give up the ones on the far side.
Right.
You know, and then add two of them to those, and I think one of them to Shelley's desk. That would cover us. And then if we have to reconfigure the room for, you know, a staff meeting,
right.
If we've got six of those, we can put those on the tables in a different configuration. And he said the way the microphones are actually made is that they sit on the table, but they use the table. When your voice bounces off the table, the microphone picks it up.
Yes.
Right.
So he says they do a really good job. He said you just have to remember to put them back in the charging dock when you're done, so they're charged up and ready to go for the next
show. So commissions that have more than four sitting here.
There'll still be mics up here.
There'd still be mics that they could.
They would just look different than these.
Right.
There'll
gotcha.
Be a small.
And they're smaller, so they can be, you know, passed down the table if needed.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So, we just don't have the capacity in that unit to add more microphones without giving up some of these gooseneck mics.
All right, just talk me through that again, because this is where I'm getting a little confusing. I think I'm good on the new microphones we're bringing in. But as I read this proposal, it's taking four of these microphones away, not two of them away, which if we take four of these away, we're down to three.
Right.
Taking those two away, so we'd end up with, and Barb, just help me if I'm missing here, we'd end up with three of these gooseneck microphones up here.
I thought you said four.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. It says that they will remove six of the existing gooseneck microphones. Four of the existing gooseneck microphones are located at the supervisor's desk.
Right.
So that's four out of seven, so that means we have three left, if I'm doing my math right. And the other two, to get to six, would come off of that area.
Right.
Right.
And so I'm trying to picture.
Yeah, see, I think our initial discussion was that they were only going to remove two up here. Two up here, those two, and I thought there. Don't you have one over there? Don't you? And hers for five, and then.
It depends on the configuration of the room.
Because I don't know that we want to get down to just.
That was my concern. Is I don't know that three dedicated microphones up here is enough. I think five is the perfect number.
Yeah.
For up here, and so I just want to make sure that we're. I think we're almost there, Barb. I appreciate the work. I really think we're almost there. I just want to make sure we're.
Let's touch base with I can't remember the gentleman's name that we met with.
Les.
Let's touch base with him again and go back over this just to make sure that everybody's going to be on the same page.
Okay.
Just so, yeah.
You can
just
do that.
Because I don't want to, after all this time, I don't want to end up with something that we don't really want or isn't going to work just right. So.
Well, the caveat here is if we do decide in the future that we do need more than the 6 microphones, the microphones can be upgraded to a different system. So we'd only have to replace the system. But, yes, I can revisit that with Les if you'd feel comfortable. I'd do that. Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, I think what I'd like to see, and like I say, I love the framework here. I think you're on the right track. I'd like to see 5 dedicated microphones up here, the rest of them for the system be the wireless, with a configuration that looks like this, a configuration that looks like a rectangular or square table out in the room somewhere, a configuration like we do for budget work sessions. Those are the 3 configurations that I can think of
right.
that we want to be able to publicly record, and then I think we can make everything else work.
Right.
And but I think it starts with 5 dedicated microphones up here.
I think you're right.
Yeah, because it's much easier to share between this space and that space if we've got the other commissions that are sitting. And that was my concern, is how do we adequately utilize the other commission bodies that could be using this facility.
Because I think in, you know,
we were going to take that and put it up in the middle in front so that we could place
a wireless
or a handheld.
Yeah, and if not the whole podium, just a stand. Because that's, I mean, that was, the whole discussion started out of being able to pick up people in the audience.
Right.
And really the only practical way we're going to be able to do that is to put a stand mic. And, I mean, you're still going to have to get up.
And let me say this. For running a Board of Supervisors meeting, I'm going to encourage us to, even if we have the capability to pick up people talking to the audience, I'm going to encourage us to continue to have them come up, introduce themselves, and go.
Yeah,
and so for me, as I think this through, I'm not nearly as concerned about getting, you know, what somebody's saying back in the back of the room. If we want to hear from them, we'll have them come up.
I definitely want them coming to a mic someplace to be identified.
Yep.
So, Rick, clarify for me one more time. You want the Board of Supervisors set up.
Yep.
You want the budget set up.
Yep.
And what was your third setup?
The rectangular kind of a staff meeting, mental health meeting.
Right.
The different meetings that from time to time we'll hold in here.
Right.
And when I say the Board of Supervisors set up, I would say any board commission set up, so it would be these 5 microphones live.
Right.
Because this is the only 3-person board that meets up here.
Right.
Everybody
right.
else is 5.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
So, Barb, hopefully that's not complex. Hopefully it doesn't take us back to
7.
Pardon?
Planning and zoning is 7-person.
Is it?
Right, but my understanding, we'll just bring 2 of the wireless mics. So that would be a 4th setup where we'd have 2 of the wireless up here.
Yeah, and if you had to even pass between the 2 for conversation, they don't all speak at once anyway.
Sure.
You know, so that's, you know, but it's the ease of being able to transition from one person to another. If we've got the 5 here, makes sense to me.
And does this setup still allow for that cordless handheld mic?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Barb, if we could just ask you to go back and refine, stick with this, but refine it down a little bit, get it set up like we want it, and let's try to get this done next week.
Yep. Okay. Will do.
Is that enough time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barb.
You're welcome.
You bet.
You're not going anywhere, though, anyway, because you're up next.
Okay. So far, so good.
Mm-hmm.
No agency reports, departmental reports. Well, let's hear from Barb Steinbeck, Information Technology.
Okay.
Good morning, Board. Good
morning. Again.
How are you all this morning on St. Patrick's Day?
Hey, I'm getting a whole lot better. Can't you see?
I don't think Wayne has on any green at all.
Oh, he told us about that earlier. Well, I'd like to start off the update this morning with some comments on our IP phone upgrade. We have finished that, I'm very pleased to say. The last pieces of it were the call centers that we have here at Story County, the Amber Alert call center and the EOC call center. We prepared documentation for these two call centers to use in the event of an emergency. I typed that up. We did some trial runs and worked really great. And then last week when there was the Amber Alert for Linn County, we were like, oh, my God, do we have to need this? But thankfully that ended on a good note. So we didn't get a chance to test it. However, the volunteers for the Amber Alert do have a test scheduled for March. And so if there's any changes or anything from that, we'll make changes to the documentation. What they're going to do, both call centers are set up so that the calls can be recorded, which is especially important for the Amber Alert. And there is a thumb drive that goes in the back of the phone that once the call initiates, they would press the record button, record all the conversations. I believe each thumb drive is able to handle 99 hours of calls, which any one person on a shift would not have more than that. But then at the end of their shift, per what we've outlined in our instructions, they would remove the thumb drive, turn it into the supervisor for that shift. They would copy it to a folder on a laptop and then put the thumb drive back in the phone so that we make sure that we record everything and they're fresh. Part of this CLP phone lease was included as you remember, when we found out that CLP may not be with us after July 1st, we decided to lease their phones instead of purchasing. And now, after talking with Optime, they may be interested in taking over that lease. It appears that Mark Volkamer, the representative from LightEdge, he knows Chris Sorensen. So as soon as we had a meeting a few weeks ago, Mark called me, and he assured me that it would be fine with them because we did have a three-year lease. He said that would be fine if we could transfer it to Optime, and I believe they're working on the details now. One of the things they wanted to do was to have the same phone numbers. And so this makes that piece of it, the transition, so much easier. So at the end of this upgrade, we now have every office in Story County on the same system and reachable with four-digit dialing. One of the problems we ran into, I'll just go back and finish the sentence on line two. The EOC call center, I don't know if you recall how it's set up, but it's set up in a rectangular arrangement, and all of the cables are on the outer walls. This presents a tripping hazard, which in the safety committee we've talked about that a lot of times. So once we reviewed with facilities what it would take to recable that room, we decided to include it in next year's budget because it would be cost prohibitive. In the meantime, we're going to put down the thick threshold cable channels that you put the cables through to avoid the tripping. But I'm excited about these call centers. Hopefully we don't have a chance to use them, but we still will test with them to make sure that everybody knows the procedure. Now, the Amber Alert call center is going to be more mobile. All of the phones are in a cart that has to be plugged in. The EOC is up and running immediately. So that's the two differences. The next topic, we've already talked about the audio upgrade for the boardroom. So I'll come back to you next week with some additional microphone options. We've been working on a lot of networking projects without a network administrator. So it's been a struggle for us. But and you may have noticed the last couple weeks we've had a few outages for the NetApp installation. What this is our staged approach to this. And on the first outage, we just moved the shares, like your shared drives, the S drive and the G drive. We moved them over to the new NetApp. And we also moved it so that you were accessing these shares over the new fiber that we have from Central Iowa Broadband, the 100 meg connection. I don't know if you've noticed any speed. We notice it because, you know, that's what we're looking for. But it's more stable now, and it's on the fiber. So that removes that off of that 20-meg Windstream connection, which we still own until October of 2016. But for now, that's serving as a backup connection for us. The second part of the update was to move all the NetApp to the new switches that we have there to provide more stability and fastness. And then we also moved Conservation onto our network. I don't know if you were aware, but they previously had their own server. And so now everything is on the same network. So we're moving ahead with that. Another project we were working on is the redundant network for the 911 system. This is something that the MAPS G group has been struggling with the last few years. We don't have a fully redundant network for the 911 system. And Doug Houghton asked me if I would. It's been hard because all three entities involved, ISU, the City of Ames, and Story County, we all have other jobs to do, so it's been hard to get this finalized. So Doug Houghton asked me if I would oversee it. I did get together with Communication Innovators, and we did a survey of the different sites. And this 911 redundant network will use those strands of fiber that we received from the DOT a few years ago. So we got all the new configuration taken care of, and everything was presented to the MAPS G group at a cost of $158,000. We thought it might be a lot less than that, so now we need to take a step back and figure out how we're going to fund this if indeed we want to pursue it. And I do think it's something we're going to pursue. Now the issue is when. We had set aside money for the MAPS G group to replace the hardware that our servers use, so maybe some of this money will be allocated toward that. We're also working on the new fiber connection to HSC. Those documents were submitted to CenturyLink, and I haven't received a date yet. He's checking the schedule, but that will certainly make everything doing with EDMS and ProLaw a lot faster. It will be 10 times faster than what they're currently using. Another project that is going to take some time is, now that the phone system has been upgraded, we need to investigate what exactly is still running through the old Siemens phone system. It seems like every day we find something new. And, you know, granted, this was installed in 1998, so there's definitely been a lot of things run through there that aren't documented. What I'd like to move us toward, all of our fax numbers still go through this system, and I'd like to move toward a more electronic e-fax solution, so that we don't have to have a POTS line for every fax number that we own. We also did a switch replacement at the Justice Center last year, replacing an 11-year-old switch that has gone down twice in the last 6 months. The new switch should be a lot more stable, and we won't have any more midnight calls. In order to do that, we had to send all the dispatch calls over to the City of Ames, and then Nick Briziano sat in there to take calls. And it was a two-hour outage, and I think it went very well. And we're also working on the fiber connection project with Story Medical. We got together and discussed what they'd like to do. They have the new building, and originally they thought that they would retire the old building. Well, that's not true. They're moving a lot of the teaching and some of the offices over there, so they need a better fiber connection, and I was approached and asked if Story might be interested in going with a joint project, because ultimately we could use the same fiber connection to get over to the Justice Center as a redundant loop as well. So we have had discussions and have gotten together, and I've created an IRU, which means that the fiber would be technically owned by Story County, but we would in turn lease it back to Story Medical. And I just received confirmation on Friday that I hadn't heard anything for a while, so I was wondering what was going on, and they just said they've been really busy. So their first initial thought was that they would break ground as soon as the frost left, so I'm not sure. I think we're a little behind that schedule, but as soon as the IRU is approved, then we'll go ahead and I'll bring it to the board for your consideration. Originally, Hiya had planned on a fiber bypass at CLP. The fiber that I mentioned earlier with the NetApp from Central Iowa Broadband, it goes from this building through CLP to HSC and then City Hall. We had initially planned on bypassing CLP, and now I put that on hold because as of last week, it appears that we may need to keep a network connection there, at least to handle the door security and perhaps a switch.
Yeah, and I'd encourage us, as long as Story County owns that building,
exactly,
Let's keep it as part of our,
exactly,
our loop.
That makes sense, because we don't know what the future is going to hold. Mm-hmm. So for now, we've got that on hold. We had begun the project, but it's not going to hurt anything to keep it where it's at. The last networking project I wanted to talk about was also deals with the 911 system. The MAPS-G group purchased 5 new firewalls for a replacement on the system, and these are the 5505s. The firewalls have been configured by ISU staff, and nobody had the time to install them. So here we are sitting with 5 5550s that are no longer current. You can't buy these anymore, but the hardware hasn't been retired, so we were at the point, okay, what do? Buy 5 new firewalls or install them? And we agreed, myself included, that we should get these 5505 installed because they're newer than the software and the hardware that is currently in place. So I'm going to also ask, reach out to Communication Innovators to give us a quote on that, and then that'll free up the IT staff from all 3 entities. It's sometimes difficult when there's, you know, the Story County IT staff, Story County IT needs come first, and the same for all the others. So I think this is going to lead us down the path of maybe making a decision. Do we all collectively support one IT person to handle these kind of projects? Because it seems like they stall, and then we're stumbling over them all the time, and nothing gets done. So that's something.
How long have we had these? And I know it's, when I say we, I don't mean Story County. I know it's a collective kind of
thing. They've been here, yes, in our office. We've had them over 3 years.
Okay.
They were here when I got here, and they were all configured and ready to go. So.
Well, and nothing's changed technologically in the last 3 years.
No. Yeah. Well, not as far as these are concerned, it hasn't. Our Tyler Content Management project is moving along very well. I was pleased, and they've had some issues on their end with the person who was working on this for us. He left, and so we kind of started all over. But this content management would allow them to add different documents and things to a parcel as an attachment, and the parcel being the key item that everything is linked to. So the issue they were running into is taking images from our old AS400 system and converting them into something that the content management program could see and understand. And originally, Story County was in contract with Solutions to convert these images for us because Tyler felt that since they were a direct competitor, they wanted to go through us. However, the person that left didn't give them the correct specifications, so now Tyler took it upon themselves to work directly with Solutions, and we did get our first 225,000 images converted. And what these are, the stamps and annotations were the problem they were having. In an AS400 system, it's a line of code. That's how it identifies an image. For instance, in a Windows system, you click on a picture, and there it is. So it was hard for the software to identify or to make sure that a line of code equaled a picture. And what the stamps and annotations were, for instance, if you stamp something that says paid or date expired or something like that. So these were basically overlays to the original documents. But they submitted 225,000 of these to us to review. We reviewed them, submitted a list of potential problems that we could see, and then, unfortunately, Tyler thought they were done, and we're like, well, no, according to the contract that we signed 3 years ago, it was up to 1 million documents, and they had only converted the real estate. So now we're working on that next piece, which would include the treasurer's documents and the sheriff's documents. So I'm pleased with the progress that we've done with that so far. But what this has also led us to, that came up in our real estate meeting last week, we've had a lot of changeover in the auditor's office and with different people that use the Tyler software. So we'd like to do some additional training. Since version 10 was installed in February 2 years ago, there's a lot of people who are just doing what they were shown by the other staff members. So I've started to collect a list of the different training needs, and when I submit them to Tyler, then they will, of course, give me a quote how much it would cost for us to train these people. I think it makes sense, and as with anything else that you use, you have to use it for a little while before you know what questions to ask sometimes. So I think that we're moving in a good direction with Tyler Content Management. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Asterix phone implementation. This is separate from the IP phone upgrade that I have done. This is the 911 phone upgrade, which involved ISU, the city, and Story County. This was initiated in February of 2013. We're still plugging away at it. We won't sign off until we're positive that this will work with the new phone system that we have here at Story County. There have been intermittent issues, some of them just as simple as, like with the ASA intermittent connection through the city. That was just some cables that needed replacing. We had a problem with the reporting server not sending data, and this would be data that included information on the different calls that come into the 911 system. That turned out to be just an IP address that they had fat-fingered, and it was the same IP address as another server. So some of it is a little sloppy. There's some problems being identified that shouldn't have happened. The big thing that I think, the calls not being recorded on the internal lines of dispatch after we upgraded the dispatch area to the IP phone. All this was a case of is Waltech, who controls the call recording software, and they needed to upgrade their software. Once you go through an upgrade like this, you realize there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of it, unfortunately, not documented, and you don't find it out until it happens. Now, luckily, those issues were easily resolved, and easily may not be the right word. Sometimes it takes 2 or 3 days after all the troubleshooting to figure out what happened. But the last item, the caller ID not showing on the phone display when dispatch calls out, this is a real issue, and the problem boils down to we have what's called SIP trunks here in Nevada, and I don't expect you to understand what that means. It's just a technology that helps with identifying the addresses where the calls are coming from. Apparently, this phone system, it's called the Zetron system, it does not understand the SIP technology. And so they have promised us a new hardware upgrade. However, that hasn't happened yet. But what's happening at dispatch on our end, and each phone system has different problems, but on our end, when dispatch calls internally, like the main sheriff's line, 6566, comes into dispatch, and then they route it out. When they try to call an extension to forward a call, they don't get any call information on their display until the call is answered. So if nobody answers, there's no record they made that call. And coming from dispatch, this is an issue. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Zetron has. They've promised us that this new Zetron upgrade will resolve that issue, but SIP technology's been around since 1996. So it's not new. It's not earth-shattering. I just hope that it works. And the position that we are all taking, as you can see, since February of 2013 is a long time for somebody to work on a project. They want to have us sign a 30-day sign-off, which means as of this date that we sign this document, 30 days, if there's no issues, we consider the project done. And we're not at that point yet.
Let me go back and ask this question in relationship to a call on any other situation. For example, wouldn't you expect that if you made a call, even though the person didn't answer it, there would be at least a record that the call was made on this end? So if there was ever a question in law enforcement that there was an attempt made to contact, say, X, you got verification that at least that a call went out and you were not able to make connection. That still exists, would it not?
No.
Wow.
Not from dispatch.
Internal.
Internally, yes.
If dispatch calls outside of Story County,
yes,
it's
I should
showing
have clarified.
Up.
Yes.
It's
outside.
Just if dispatch calls you,
right.
And if you answer, it shows up. If
right.
you don't answer, there's no record showing that they ever called
right.
you, but that's just for internal lines in Story County.
Right, yeah.
Called OK200, in case you wanted to know that. No, but what the calls come in from the outside on these POTS lines. So they come in through Windstream, go into the Zetron system, and then they transfer it to the LightEdge system. So that translation, that handshake, isn't happening. there's always three parts to a handshake. You extend your hand, the other person extends your hand, and then you shake, and then you confirm. And, well, the confirming part of it isn't happening.
So take this from a standpoint of continuity operation or emergency situations. If we receive a call from dispatch regarding an emergency, obviously we have a chain of command, for example.
Yes.
And but if they were unable to actually get the initial caller, they would have to go to some other internal contact to be notified of that emergency. And here's the reason I'm asking this question. In previous years, dispatch, if we had an emergency, usually the board chair would get the call. But let's say the board chair is not available and did not respond, they generally go through vice chair down,
sure,
et cetera. That time lost, does dispatch determine that that could be a critical component in terms of the inability for a speedy notification of a particular crisis? And my concern is, again, how we would notify employees. Say we've got an active shooter, we've got whatever it could be, you know, and we're trying to go through that scenario of notification of key personnel that this is something that needs to be addressed. Do you feel there is enough of a redundancy, if there's something that we have that would minimize the time by which we could make sure that our internal people were notified?
They do have protocol where they would contact Nick or Dina personally, you know, directly through their cell phones. But also, and maybe I should have clarified that, they can pick up the phone and call an extension. It's just the ones that they're passing through that come in, that they're transferring, that don't have a paper trail, so to speak. So in the event of emergency, they can pick up and directly call an extension. And if they don't get an answer there, they've got, you know, their fallback with Nick or Dina.
Mm-hmm.
Another item we've been working on that it's kind of exciting. We've done some changes, some noticeable changes on the Story County website. One of those was to offer a Farm Watch module. And this is kind of like the Amber Alert system. There's a call list that's created and you are asked to be put on that call list. So if somebody notices suspicious activity on different farm sites,
right.
Kyle has worked on that, and he's really enjoyed it. And that kind of led into Keith Morgan from Emergency Management said, well, can you do something for people to sign up for emergency notifications? The problem we run into is our Civic Plus website is a series of modules and frames. And for the emergency notification, we had a difficult time trying to find where that would be most noticeable on the front page. And we finally ended up putting it dead center in the middle, down below. Well, just last week, I was in conversation with people at the sheriff's office, how's that working for you? And they said they're still getting all kinds of calls from people who can't find it. So I don't know if we need to make that a flashing neon notification box or what, but Kyle has enjoyed his work on that, so. Other topics, you're aware of the Pitney Bowes postage solution. We've got the server installed. The workstation is installed. We're just waiting for them to send us the drivers for the printer. And I think they're using it right now, but they're just not printing from that workstation. So that should be an easy fix. We do have two positions available now in information technology. So if you know of anybody who wants to work for Story County in the IT department, please pass it along.
What kind of timeline are you hoping for on getting those filled?
The deadline for the computer support analyst is this Friday. And then the network administrator, we have not put an end date on that. I'd like to get them filled as soon as possible.
Okay.
I talked a little bit about the CLP transition. We are going to bring the computers back. The phones will stay. We've got to do some work down in the server room to accommodate Optimize Network. But we've been working with them pretty regular, so I'm pleased with the progress we've made.
I think we talked about this, but I'll make sure and mention it again. we need two of the computers coming back out of CLP.
Right.
Back in the Board of Supervisors.
Sure. So. Yes. Listen, I've talked about that. Okay. And they're less than a year old, so there shouldn't be any problems with upgrading or anything. I also wanted to mention that I've scheduled an ePanic demo. If you recall, during our budget talks, we talked about maybe testing this. And it's a software or a hardware. You can have a foot pedal or a button you click on your computer to alert whoever you configure in an event of an emergency. It's kind of like the stoplight situation. You can press yellow that maybe you think a situation is going to happen but not sure, and red is, you know, hey, there's a situation. Interesting to note that the ePanic vendors contacted me and said that Marshall County is looking at this as well. And so we've coordinated to do the demos on the same day. So I'd be interested to talk to them after the demo and see what their impressions were. Another thing, and I'll just close with this, the MAPSG group has been really struggling with how to address the external agencies who would like access to our OSSI SunGuard software. And this is what the Sheriff's Department uses. We've isolated a lot of issues. Unfortunately, these smaller agencies don't have budgets. They don't have staff. How do we address, number one, how are they going to pay for the hardware needs that they need to access our system? How do they pay for software licensing, which could be up to $5,000 for each implementation? How do we allow them to access? The message server is located here at Story County. We don't necessarily want them on our network, so a lot of questions. And then how do they access it on their end? For instance, the Huxley Fire Department wants access to our system. Do they have an internet connection? Do they have one that's capable of doing this? I think there's a lot of questions they haven't looked into. They just want to know what's going on, and you can't blame them for that. And then who's going to train them and who's going to support them? So these are some questions that we're struggling with, but we're constantly being asked, when is it going to be available? And I've been asked to form a task force to look into this, and Dean and I have had many occasions to sit down and talk about it, and these are the considerations we've come up with, but we haven't gotten any answers yet. So,
and what is this board's role in helping determine those answers once you guys have looked at it?
I think once we come up with something that's more solid and the type of access that we're able to allow them, we would bring it to the board to get your thoughts. You know, it's always nice to ask other opinions. And Paul, you've probably got a whole different perspective than anyone else, too, because you've worked there and you know some of the challenges that the smaller agencies face. So once we have that, we have no deadline. We've been working through this for quite a while now. So once we come up with something, I would like to bring it to the board, at least for your input. I think it's something the MAPSG agency will make the decision on. However, the network access, I don't feel comfortable opening up Story County to that type of threat. You know, a lot of these departments have volunteers, so they're working on the weekends, so they have their kids there. I don't know what the scenario might be, but I envision things that could happen, and I just don't want to open ourselves up to that vulnerability. Is there any questions you have for me?
Nope.
I know I've talked a long time, and my voice held out.
And you didn't cough at all?
Yeah,
you
did great.
Your voice.
Did great.
Good.
Good deal.
Thanks, Barb. Thank
good.
You.
Mm-hmm.
You did.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
No other reports, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Yes. Yesterday I met with Michelle, you know, who is now, you know, the new coordinator for CLP. And we talked about really how the meeting with Optima went, that I attended, what was her initial impression, what kind of feedback she got from staff as for the interviews that followed, and everything was very positive. She said that just communication from clients as well as family members have been extremely positive. They seem to now feel that the direction that Optima is proposing is certainly not going to create additional concerns on their part. She also mentioned that They are swamped now with referrals from other providers because of Optimaze looking at some of the shifting some individuals from the RCFs to individual group homes within the community. And she said, this has been something we've needed for years with the demand, and now just more and more people are wanting to make contact to find out how timely some of this basically will take place. Jan Becker, I believe the name, who was overseed one of the group homes, has been named by Optime as the program coordinator. She said, this is a change from their original scope. At first, they didn't think they would need this position, or at first, they thought this might be a position that she would take. But looking at the size of our operation and so forth, and through discussions with them, they really felt that they needed two people, and because of the overall coordination, and she felt very comfortable about Jan's role in assuming that position. The one area that was interesting was that the signage, as of May 1st when they take over, the sign on the front of the building were identifying community life. Currently, right now, they want to work with SignPro and to just kind of cover over that sign, not completely remove it as yet. I asked Michelle, had Optime reached out to Cal yet? And she didn't know, but she was going to check. I told her, well, why don't you give him a heads-up call just to make sure that there's been that communication, because still that is our building. And she said of all the transition that has taken place, that probably would be the most difficult day for her, is when she comes to work and then all of a sudden that sign is no longer on the front of the building, which I, you know, told her about. And so I thanked her overall on behalf of the board for, you know, how things have moved forward. And so she was very appreciative of you know, how things are going at this time. We did talk about the storage, the things that were downstairs. She said that a lot of the supplies is probably going to be given to the group homes, because those are personal care items and so forth, rather than staying stored downstairs. But she said all in all, it's going quite well. She said the one thing that was interesting was that the interviews with staff, there seemed to be a few staff members thinking that they didn't need to interview, that their job would automatically roll over. And she reassured them that, no, you've got to go through the interview process now, because you have a different, you know, provider that's, you know, that you'll be working for, et cetera. So they will still be setting that up the next couple of days as they move forward. But all in all, she really feels good about way things are moving forward. And she did ask the question regarding the lease agreement and that, and I just told her, I says, you got, first of all, I said, that's still being finalized. I says, we have one board member working with our, you know, civil attorney and Optime and so forth through all of that. And I said, so we have not had the final notification as to exactly what all of that will take place. I says, understanding it's our desire to make this transition as easy as possible within this first year, and over a series of years we may see some changes that will come to bear. And I says, but there is nothing for public knowledge at this time in terms of an actual lease agreement for the facility that I'm aware of.
It's in draft form in Optime's hands at this point.
Right.
They're still reviewing it. I would expect it to come back to us in short order, and at that point is when we'll deal with it here in a Tuesday morning.
That's what I told her, that under the structure, that's why we wouldn't. I don't know any more about it at this point.
Yep.
But all in all, it's a very good meeting, and I'm encouraged.
Thank you, Wayne. I feel like we've finally turned a corner now. It's been a hard couple years. Optime has done a phenomenal job, from my estimation, coming in. I think they made a great decision in retaining Michelle. to help run the program here in Story County. I am really, really encouraged with where things are and how this is progressing. And, Wayne, I appreciate you staying on top of it. Anything else?
Nope.
Paul, anything?
Pass
from me. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. We're Board can't take any action due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one, announcers and supervisors. Wayne.
I just think it's important to acknowledge, you know, the NC2A, you know, Iowa State women and men. I'm sure everybody is going to be tuned in, at least in Story County. I'm sure people at the University of Northern Iowa and the University of Iowa are equally going to be excited. You know, March Madness is a time that, you know, everybody gets all revved up. And so, obviously, I'm wishing all three state institutions good luck, except if they somehow we meet one another, and then I'm pulling for the Cyclones. We've got, with spring break going on, I think, you know, we'll see folks in and out. During that time, I think we've got a couple meetings coming up tomorrow. I'm excited to take a look at the three candidates for Planning and Development Board and so forth. So we'll see how that all factors in. And the rest of the week should be relatively quiet, I believe. And we know that you're going to
I'm heading to Kentucky.
Right. And so we just want you to bring
wife and kids.
And we just want you to bring us a victory.
I'm going to do my best.
A couple victories.
That's
a couple
exactly
victories.
Right. Paul, anything?
Pass
from me.
Yeah.
Take a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Good.